Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It's time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. If you guys have questions for John, text them in right now to 710-710, the Busy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to your questions before we let him go. Hello, John.
Hello. How are you?
We're good. We're good.
Hey, busy day today, huh?
What's
on the coaching front, the GM front, all the different things that happened today. Wow.
Well, Maura was just telling me during the break, it looks like our old buddy Daryl Bevel might have a job with the Jacksonville Jaguars as their coordinator.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to be the offensive coordinator because it looks like they're trying to work out a deal right now, and they'll get that done probably by tomorrow. And we all know that Raheem Morris ended up going to the Rams as a defensive coordinator. We've got the hiring of Nick Sirianni in Philadelphia, as opposed to Joshy Boy McDaniels. Way to go, Eagles! And so it's
wait, you don't like Joshy Boy?
No.
Okay.
Yeah,
I knew that.
I mean, again, it's funny because you've seen tweets coming out today that said that so you can treat players bad, you can treat owners, you can treat coaches bad, you can treat general managers bad, but don't treat an owner bad. And by pulling out of the job in Indianapolis at the last minute after accepting it to stay with the Patriots, then you wonder how much did that play into Jeff Lurie's decision, because Lurie has a good relationship with Robert Irsay, and so they had a 9-hour interview with Joshy Boy, and then Nick Sirianni, who ironically just happened to be down in the Florida area, and was somebody that really I think they targeted more because of Carson Wentz, because what they know is that he's tied to Frank Reich, and of course Nick Sirianni works well with Frank, and Frank had been in Philadelphia coaching up Carson Wentz, and so it looks like this was a move really to kind of put things together to get Carson Wentz better.
So now there's just one potential landing spot for Eric Bieniemy, right?
That is Houston? Correct. Houston, yeah.
So what do you think happens?
The thing that I hear is it's going to be, particularly if the Bills lose this week, it could be Leslie Frazier. But in a lot of ways, what you may be looking at is that, it could be the loser of the Kansas City Buffalo game could lose one of their offensive coaches, one of their coaches, because Leslie Frazier obviously is a defensive coach. So if the Bills lose, then Leslie can go over and get the job with Houston. Or if Kansas City lose, then maybe they can go with Eric Bieniemy. Also in the mix is Jim Caldwell, the former Colts Lions coach. So they're still kind of working on that.
Hey, John, the Detroit Lions, we talk about all these coaching geniuses and everything. They went a different way. Dan Campbell, I thought that was really funny, though, that we're looking for creative play callers and this and that. And here's the guy that, I don't know if you heard that speech, but that he gave about how we're going to hit people in the head and bite kneecaps and things like that. He kind of came, to me anyway, John, he kind of came out of nowhere. I know he played in the league and everything, but I thought that was interesting they went with that.
Yeah, very interesting, because, again, I think it surprised everybody, because you're talking about somebody that hasn't called plays. I mean, he's not the coordinator. I know Nick Sirianni didn't call plays because that was all Frank Reich. But, it's just like out of nowhere, they get somebody who is a former Lions player, and he may not be calling plays, but I guess he's going to be biting off the kneecaps of opponents on the field. So it's like it's interesting to be able to put it that way. They ended up getting Aaron Glenn, who I think is a pretty good coach out of New Orleans, as the defensive coordinator. So I thought that was a pretty good idea. So, we're going to see. I mean, I just kind of wonder. I mean, here you have a coach who really hadn't been a coordinator, and you have a general manager, Brad Holmes, who's never been in the office. I mean, he's been an area scout. And so, is this combination going to work? And then to make things even crazier, I think they both got 6-year deals.
Yeah, that's right. Dan Campbell did.
Yeah. Did Andy Reid wasn't a coordinator, though, right?
What's that?
Andy Reid was never a coordinator, was he? I don't think
he wasn't. No, I mean, because he was on Holmgren's staff, right? And
so the quarterback coach?
He was a quarterback coach, yeah. And he did pretty well.
Yeah, he's done all right for himself, hasn't he?
Not bad.
But John, you probably had heard about Dan Campbell. I mean, it was just very, it was very unanticipated for me, and especially that long of a deal. I don't know. It was just seemed strange.
It's the Lions.
It's Detroit. Exactly.
It's Detroit, yes.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, Justin Herbert, wow. I mean, you know, we hear that Staley is really eager to build Brandon Staley, the new head coach for the Chargers, around Justin Herbert. I was looking at his, you know, 15 games, 66% completion. You know, he went 6-9, you know, played in 15 games, but it was 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, and won the last four in a row in which he threw 8 touchdowns, one interception, and then ran for 2 TDs. Very quietly, I mean, maybe it's not quiet, but he really was fantastic.
Yeah. No, he was the rookie of the year without any question. I mean, it's like you can maybe look at Justin Jefferson at wide receiver, but how do you turn down a quarterback that threw for that many yards? Because I think, isn't it it might have been a record for a rookie quarterback in how many yards he threw, and he didn't start the season as a starting quarterback.
Right.
Hey, John, what are your memories? I don't know what your interactions were with Ted Thompson, passed away, you know, former Green Bay Packers GM.
Well, I wrote this for 710sports.com. Is I'm going to have a little bit of a hard time watching the Packer game on Sunday. And the reason for that is that, obviously, I got to know Ted very well, and he was so accommodating to me as a reporter when he was here from 2000 to 2004. And so the story that I told, and this is why it's going to be really tough, is that you know how I try to call just about everybody I can to prepare my mock draft. Not that I was trying to win any kind of mock thing. I just want to try to know what teams are going to do. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I looked at back in 2005, which was his first year as the general manager, was that, there's two quarterbacks in this draft. Alex Smith, who's expected to be the number one pick in the draft, and some guy named Aaron Rodgers. And so I'm going through my mock draft, and I knew that Washington was considering taking a quarterback. But I didn't. In the end, I was hearing, well, they're not going to take a quarterback. And so what I ended up doing is on the Friday night, before the Saturday draft, I called Ted Thompson, and I said, hey, Ted, I know, don't consider me being stupid here, but I just have to tell you something. Because, you know, the one thing, you know, Dave, Bob, you know, as a reporter, you don't ask somebody what they're going to do, particularly a general manager. It's like they're not going to tell you. So it's like you avoid this. But I said, Ted, I just got to tell you this. You probably know this, but I just got to say to you that if Aaron Rodgers gets past the 9th pick in this draft, he's coming to you at 24. Now, naturally, Ted, being the professional that he was, you know, said, oh, I appreciate that. That's interesting. You know, didn't tip his hand that he knew it or didn't know it or anything else. I do know that they had a little bit of a meeting afterwards, and it very well could just have been a regular Friday night meeting before they go in. But I know that the Aaron Rodgers thing was brought up. And so all of a sudden, here comes the draft. Washington doesn't take Aaron Rodgers. He falls to 24. Ted Thompson takes him, and sure enough, it turned out exactly like I thought it would. And he gets, you know, he goes from one Hall of Fame quarterback in Brett Favre, because, you know, Favre was getting older, starting to show signs of age, although he still had a couple more years left. And then Rodgers comes in, sits for 2 years, and then has had his own Hall of Fame career. So as I watch this game on Sunday, I think I'm going to be a little bit touched on it, because, again, it's not like I helped Ted Thompson, because he probably knew, but I thought it was okay to be able to break that news if he didn't know it, to study it and see what's going to happen, because I know at some point they're going to be looking for that replacement for Brett Favre.
I'm guessing they knew it.
Yeah, they probably did. Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that.
Because I was at the draft that year. Yeah. We used to go every year, and the word was the Niners were desperately trying to trade that pick, that they didn't want to go with Alex Smith.
Uh-huh.
And Aaron Rodgers was going to be a consideration, obviously being from California, and there was that connection. So, yeah, it was swirling all over the place, and they were talking about potential landing spots for Rodgers. Mm-hmm. And was that the first time we saw really focused on a player at the draft who was expected to go higher, and then every pick that wasn't him, the camera would go to him.
Yeah. That would be a classic example.
Was he the first one that,
he wouldn't be the first,
that we
brought
into our con? Like, man, this poor guy. Every pick that's not him, they keep flashing to him to get a reaction.
Yeah. Well, I know it's the thing that was so weird about it, because, you know, in some teams' boards, the ratings were pretty much the same, you know, Alex being the equal of Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, one of the things that you know, the coach at Cal at that time kind of messed up Aaron a little bit, because if you remember, Jack Tedford was the head coach, and what he would do, because he was also almost like the quarterback coach, he would have everybody throw the same way. You know, because in other words, he wants the arm up right by the ear, and you have to throw it that way. And so that's, and it kind of hurt Aaron Rodgers a little bit, because he wasn't throwing his natural way. Now, this comes from conversations that I've had with Aaron through the years, and particularly like 2 years into his career, because I go to a Packer training camp and I'm talking to Aaron, and I said, what's going on with you? It's like, you're throwing so great right now. Not that you weren't great, but I mean, you so with so much more authority, with so much more power. He says, I'll tell you exactly what it is. He says, you know, in the NFL, in college, they're, you know, very attentive to the style. And of course, I had to throw a certain way to satisfy the coach. He says, but in the NFL, they're not as demanding as far as the exact way to throw. So I basically went back to my high school way of throwing the football. And that's the way he's been throwing it now his entire career since getting into the NFL.
Was he compacting?
No, he wasn't compact. I mean, you know, he just lets it fly. I mean, he reaches out. I mean, you know, it's not, he doesn't necessarily have to have that ball kind of tucked in right close to the ear or right by the ear. It's like, it's more of a natural thing. And, you know, he's just did so well in being able to throw that way. And you see, he's still able to throw that way.
I remember, I think the stunt on him was that he could kneel at the 50-yard line. Mm-hmm. On one knee and flip the ball through the goalpost.
Felt like Kyle Buller had that reputation of being able to do that. I remember, I think Jamarcus Russell was a guy. I'm like, glad they could do
the
that.
The problem with Kyle Buller is he would do that and would be intercepted and taken back for a touchdown.
and the other part is both those guys were spending a lot of time on the ground anyway, having to throw from a knee. So
I still like the other story that Aaron told me, because he started as a junior college quarterback before he went to Cal. And you know, he says, I can tell you this right now. Once I was in my freshman year at the JC, he's like, I had to be an immediate leader. I says, why is that? He says, first off, you're going to be 17, 18 years old. And the way that the junior colleges, many of them were, is that you had guys that were, you know, some 28, 29 years old, some coming, had been in prison and all that stuff. He says, if you can't manage that huddle and run the huddle without getting respect, you're in deep trouble.
Hmm. Hey, Bob's not going to like hearing this. Robert Saleh came in to the Jets. He's talking about Sam Darnold, and he says, there's a reason. He says, what I can tell you with regards to Sam is he's got an unbelievable arm talent. That's what we hear a lot about him.
That's what arm I kept hearing coming talent. Out of college.
Just not talent in his brain, maybe. Anyway, there's a reason why he was the number three pick in the draft. He's fearless in the pocket. He's got a natural throwing motion. He's mobile. He's extremely intelligent. He's tough as nails. His reputation in the locker room is unquestioned. Just that in general, there's reason why he was the third pick in the draft. So anyway, sounds like Robert Saleh. I mean, he's obviously not going to come in there and, I mean, I guess he could
say, stinks.
Well, we're going to have to take a look at everybody. But, I mean, it's just another coach that is kind of gushing over Sam Darnold.
Well, and of course, he's saying the words, but again, he even said at the press conference today, because they asked him, it's like, well, do you get any control over personnel? He says, no. Final say goes to Joe Douglas, the general manager. It's like, we'll work together on things, and, I'll make my recommendations and all that stuff, but he has final say. So it's like, he's saying the right thing for two reasons, I think. You know, number one, if they want to trade that strong-armed guy, they don't want to diminish his value. And, like, for example, which a deal that's not going to happen, but it's like Deshaun Watson. You know, at least with the two first-round picks and other draft choices that Joe Douglas has been able to assemble, you know, they have the ability to come up what would be the equal of three number one picks and two other high picks to be able to, you know, put themselves in a possible position to get Deshaun Watson. And, of course, Sam Darnold would be the equivalent of one of the number one picks. And so, you know, that consideration would be there. And, you know, Miami is not as strong as the Jets, but, you know, they can put Tua in some of the draft choices that Bill O'Brien squandered to get Laremy Tunsil and all the draft choices he traded away. You know, that could be, you know, one consideration. But in the end, everything I hear out of Houston is they're not trading Watson.
John, did the Steelers just sign the heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger and Dwayne Haskins?
No.
They signed him.
They signed him, yeah. I mean, they signed him as a young quarterback prospect. I'm sure he came in very cheaply, but, you know, and because the plan still is to keep Ben Roethlisberger at quarterback. But to think that, you know, it's like Dwayne Haskins had trouble beating out Taylor Heinicke. Right. And you know, his work ethic was bad. The teammates didn't like him as much. And so now he goes into a Steeler locker room that has, you know, more wins than the Washington football team. So, you know, I think it's a smart move on their part because you get a young prospect. And, you know, I know today they're talking to Hugh Jackson as a possible offensive coordinator. And so maybe Hugh can turn him around and put him in the right direction. And maybe Ben can help him out, too. But is he the replacement? I'd say right now, no.
Hugh Jackson is a play caller that I've admired.
Yeah.
Watching him when the Seahawks have gotten ready to play him, I think he does a really good job.
I do, too, yeah.
John, good news. We're not going to have to move the AFC Championship game, it looks like.
Oh,
to like Tuesday.
Colin Cowherd thinks you might.
Who was it that did it was Schlereth that did the impersonation.
Oh, yeah. They're just tall.
NBA they players are tall. Yeah. But anyway, it looks like he took majority of snaps at practice, yeah. So it looks like we're going
to
be
sounds to me like he went into phase four from phase three, because phase three in that five-phase protocol says that on phase three you can be out there for 30 minutes and 30 minutes only doing limited type stuff. Well, today, you know, of course, if you're going to be in phase four is non-contact work, which obviously, you know, anybody that makes contact with a quarterback wearing a red jersey named Patrick Mahomes is going to be cut. So it's like nobody's touching him. And so, you know, and the fact that he took all the snaps, I think, does tell you that he's on pace right now to be cleared and be able to start. Now, again, he's still going to have some problems because he's going to have the sore neck. He's going to have the sore toe. And so he's not going to be 100%. But again, you know, most players in this league aren't 100% when you're this late in the season.
Oh, was that his toe that he hurt earlier? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about him and, you know, maybe he would be the one guy that you would trade, you know, Russell for, because there's, you know, talk about the Deshaun Watson and everything. But the durability, John, of Russell Wilson, you can't. I mean, we don't really know. He's missed a couple of games because the popped off kneecap. But other than that, I mean, I guess he's been pretty pretty
glad they found it.
Yeah. But I mean, like, yeah, it came off like a Coke bottle cap. But I mean, look, that's the thing about Russell, that it just makes you appreciate how, you know, remember the shot that he took in the NFC Championship game from Clay Matthews mm-hmm. in 2014, John? It didn't even rattle him. Even if it did, you couldn't tell. But, I mean, look, the durability has to be a factor. And I just wonder about Mahomes. I mean, that was just kind of a weird hit that he yeah. took. And, you know, Russ takes that hit. He gets up, brushes it off, no problem.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know if it's being more compact that may help him out. Obviously, it's the way he conditions himself and the way that he prepares and all that. But, you know, Patrick being taller and, of course, the two plays, I mean, you know, it's not like Patrick did anything wrong. Like on the one play, the defensive player was spinning him around after he had released the ball and got his foot twisted in the ground, and that got the toe injury. And then the other guy came over as he was starting to come down from a run and hit his helmet right into, you know, the back of his head and caused the concussion and the neck problem. So it's like, and you could tell he was really out of it briefly.
John, I hate to say this, but his helmet was never touched.
Oh, it wasn't? Okay.
No. Not by a player, not by the ground. It was the crazy. Yeah, I've watched it 20 okay. times, John. It is the weirdest injury I've ever seen. And it was more like being choked out, you know, and it obviously tweaked a nerve in his neck or something. Right. But there was no blow to the head by a body part or the ground. It was the craziest thing ever.
Well, because if I recall, but obviously I haven't seen it as many times as you did, it was just a little bit, you know, above the shoulder. Mm-hmm. It clearly was not a cheap shot hit.
No.
None whatsoever.
He didn't even get hit. He just got tackled. He just got brought down to the ground, grabbed and brought to the ground rather than somebody running into him. And that's what made it even more odd.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and it's so weird how those concussions happen. I mean, and I've had some head-on, you know, big-time hits that didn't do anything. And then one time I got kneed in the side of the head just slightly, and it was like I was gone for 20 minutes.
Yeah. Usually it's to the back of the head where you're really sensitive.
Yeah. But, yeah, and the whiplash thing, it's just it's very strange. But it's a dangerous game. So what are you going to do?
Do your best.
Do the best you can.
Hey, John, we were having that hypothetical conversation at the beginning of the show because, you know, it's certainly not the majority of fans, but I'm sure you've probably seen it on the heels of a disappointing loss. People are pointing fingers. This is Pete's fault. This is Russell's fault. And within that small minority, we've seen people say, trade Russell Wilson. Trade him for Deshaun Watson. Trade him while he's still got value. And we played it out. We just played the hypothetical earlier. Like, all right, if you were going to trade him, who would you trade him for? And really the only guy you could say gives you a better chance of winning is probably Patrick Mahomes at this point. I mean, yeah. You know, Tom Brady's the greatest ever, but he's 43. If Aaron Rodgers were 32 or younger, I'd say Aaron Rodgers. But outside of that, is there any quarterback you would trade him for?
No. I mean, you know, you think about the idea that, you know, and I can't say for sure he'll get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I think particularly if he gets back to one more Super Bowl, he'll definitely go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's more likely he'll go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame because you can argue he's, you know, among the top three or four or five quarterbacks in the league, you know, because right now you'd have to go with Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. But I think you can easily put Russell Wilson number three, and in the early part of the season, he was number one. But to trade somebody like that is foolhardy because, again, you cost yourself. Because if you take away a Hall of Fame quarterback like that, your 12-win seasons become 7-win seasons. I give you, even though he's 43 years old, Tom Brady leaving the New England Patriots. What, mm-hmm. did they go 6-10?
Yeah. Hey, on the same topic here, I saw an article written about Deshaun Watson and if he's traded, what do they get in return? And they were quoting an anonymous front office guy from a team saying it's at least, in this guy's opinion, the quote was at least 3 first-round picks,
mm-hmm.
in addition to other things.
Right.
Does that sound right?
That's exactly what I was saying just a little bit ago. I said the equivalent of 3 first-round picks and 2 other high picks over a 3-year period. And so, you know, that limits the number of teams that can even consider it. And also, you know, if you make those trades, how are you going to be able to bounce back? Because you're not going to have the parts around him to be able to fill and get a better team. So, and if you're talking the Jets, now maybe Miami is a better team clearly than the Jets because the Jets have nothing. Because, you know, once Frank Gore went on IR, they didn't have a Pro Bowl player on the roster. You know, Miami at least has 2 good cornerbacks and some other good players, a couple offensive linemen that aren't bad, but no, you rob yourself. And again, the point I keep on hearing from down there, as bad as it is for Watson, and he definitely wants out, but he hasn't asked for a trade yet, is that they're not going to trade him.
Hypothetically, what would Russell bring back in return if the Seahawks woke up tomorrow and said, you know what, we're trading him? What would they get back?
I'd say 2 number ones, because again, it's not saying, because, you know, the difference is going to be the youth,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's in his 20s and Russell's in his 30s. So I'd say, you know, 2 number ones and maybe a number two, maybe 2 number twos. But again, you know, at least 3 draft choices, 2 of them being number ones.
Gotcha. John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. We spoke with Brady Henderson yesterday about the linebacker situation, and we talked about the future of KJ, and he brought up something that may impact that future. We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up in less than 15 minutes, you'll hear from new Lions head coach Dan Campbell, who we made reference to a couple times today. He has a soundbite for the ages. This is going to live on. Regardless of whether he succeeds or fails, this soundbite, it's sort of like, you know, Dennis Green with, you know, they are who we thought they were. Right. And, you know, any other soundbite, you know, Herm Edwards, you play to win the game. Just soundbites that just live on. This is going to be one.
Yeah, like playoffs?
Yeah. Mora?
Or you think you know, but you don't know. Yeah, this is a good one. This is
this one you listen to and go, wait, what?
What is he doing? He's a meathead.
Yeah, that's coming up. If you haven't heard it, you're going to want to hear that. That's coming up in a little less than 15 minutes. But we had Brady Henderson on yesterday, who covers the Seahawks for ESPN.com. And we were just sort of talking about the future of, you know, some of these free agents, we're going through them every day, a couple each day, and we'll work our way up to the bigger names like KJ Wright. We were talking about him, and in his opinion, he feels like they'll want to get Brooks out there more this year, which in his mind is going to drop the playing time for somebody like KJ.
The question I have there is, you know, they kept KJ on the field with Bobby Wagner this season on passing downs like they usually do. And that meant taking Jordan Brooks off the field. Well, they didn't draft Jordan Brooks in the first round to, you know, only play him less than half the snap. So I would imagine that they want to get Brooks on the field more next year, and that would probably come at the expense of KJ Wright's playing time. And if he's going to be something closer to a part-time player, how's that going to impact how far they're willing to go to re-sign him?
And how does that impact his desire to stay? Mm-hmm. You know, if I've got to imagine, I don't think KJ is going to go out there and get a, you know, 4 or 5 year deal from anybody for, you know, outrageous money. He's too far along in his career, but he might be entitled. If that's the case here, like, KJ, listen, we got this young kid, you know, we got to get him out there. We're going to decrease your snaps or however that conversation goes. I've got to imagine there's a team coming off the heels of this year that looks at him and says, man, we could get a lot of production out of this guy for at least a season or maybe two. We'll offer him a full-time role. He'll be our guy. How enticing could that be for him?
Yeah, I mean, that will probably factor in. I don't know. I mean, maybe that would be an okay deal, an acceptable deal for him because, you know, he's getting old, and if he wants to play an extra year, maybe preserving his body a little bit. I'll tell you, somebody they might consider giving less snaps to is Bobby, because Bobby now is getting up in age. He's going to be going into his 10th year. He played in 100% of the snaps in all but two games. And in Atlanta, it was 92% of the plays.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of snaps for him. 80 snaps in that game.
Is he 32, 31, 30? What is he?
I think Bobby's 31. Isn't he same age as Russ?
Russ is 32.
He's 30. He'll be 31 in June.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, you might want to get him off. But, yeah, definitely with Jordan Brooks, you want to get on. But, I mean, does that make sense? I mean, the KJ,
well, yeah, you
want to, like,
preserve these guys as best you can. And, you know, you could use the example of Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett. When they both got brought in here, that was kind of a problem. They were rotating them. Remember, there was a little discord there, not a big throw in a fit, but they were both kind of like, well, hey, what's going on here? They weren't playing as much as they wanted. And then as time went on, both of those guys couldn't sing the praises loud enough about how fresh they were at the end of the season,
right,
how they were effective at the end of the season, because it took the wear and tear off their body. But initially, I remember they didn't love that. They didn't love splitting that time out there.
It's kind of interesting because, you know, offensive line doesn't typically do that. But,
no,
you know, defensive players.
Maybe it's different, a dead sprint where offense, you're just kind of backpedaling a little bit or moving. You're stepping as opposed to sprinting and running into, maybe it's a little less abusive. I don't know.
Yeah, but anyway, I remember that. It's like they weren't, and I remember they were kind of, they butted heads a little bit.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I remember
yelling at each other on the sideline once. I can't remember what that was about.
It was in Atlanta. I'll never forget.
Very early.
The cameras caught that. Yeah, and they were, you know, and then
it was
they
heated,
were fine
and then,
afterwards.
Well, they ended up, they're best friends,
right?
So yeah, but they could look to that as if they were trying to sell that to KJ or sell it to Bobby, like you said, to preserve, hey, you guys, this could give you an extra year on your career. This is how we're going to manage it. That would be one way I would think you could sell it. But if, let's hypothetically play that out and say, all right, hey, we got to take care of Bobby here. We can't have him out there for 95% of the snaps or 92 or whatever. We're going to start spell him a little bit. How would it work with Brooks? You'd put Brooks in his spot, or would you move KJ over to his spot and have Brooks play the will, or what? How would you play that out?
Well, I know nobody wants to hear this, but I wouldn't mind seeing Cody Barton get out there and get some snaps as well. So, and I think he can play either of those positions. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I think that, look, I think Jordan Brooks can play anywhere. He gets coverage, so you can put him out there in coverage. I like the way they used KJ in coverage. I mean, just having him drop out to the flat in zone, you know, anytime man-to-man, you know, you don't want to get him matched up with anybody that's too fast, because he is going into he'll be 32 next year. So, but yeah, you can find ways to kind of rotate those guys in there. But Moyer, I think, is the one that told us, and I don't know if he went and found a snap count, but he said he played more snaps than any defensive player in the league, I think he said, or maybe he said any linebacker. But Wagner was 100%, and then 92% in one game. And, you know, I mean, he missed very few snaps. It's definitely a guy you want to, you know, you want to mind his body a little bit. So maybe you could get him and KJ on the field a little bit. Maybe you can put Cody Barton out there. We'll see what happens with BBK. I mean, Ben Berkervin looked really good on special teams. Maybe he's just this career special team guy. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, they've got some depth. And again, with the Cody Barton thing, I mean, there's people a lot smarter than me that that look at linebackers that think he should get some snaps, get him out on the field. So it'd be interesting to see how they do that. And that might actually be a plus for KJ. You know,
so would you how would you manage that, though? Because this, I mean, the conversation started is how do you get Jordan more time out there, right? So it's either resting KJ, maybe it's resting Bobby. And you brought Barton into it, so would you want to see Barton and Brooks out there at the same time, or would you always want Bobby or KJ to be out there at all times with one of the young guys?
Well, I mean, if it's base personnel, you have no problem getting Brooks on the field, first of all,
right,
if you want to keep KJ and Bobby out there as much as you want. But, you know, the question is who comes off the field, you know, of that base package. And I just think it's, you know, you could actually put Barton out there with Brooks, or you could just have Brooks and KJ one series. I mean, they can mix it up. But the point is, Jordan Brooks is a really good coverage linebacker. I mean, he became that. And, well, I said really good. For a rookie who had not played in zone coverage, he did a really good job. I did a football one-on-one earlier where he picked up a deep crosser, and that caused
is that this
a,
week?
What's that?
Is that this week?
No, we couldn't get that done this week.
Oh.
We did not have a football one-on-one.
That's right.
So
we had some technical issues.
Yeah, gotcha. but yeah, at one point he picked up a deep crosser. It was another time he picked up a deep crosser, and it caused a sack. I mean, he gets it. He understands it.
Is that his recognition or his speed, or is it both?
Well, he's got great speed, but yeah, it's just his smarts. I mean, look, knowing how to play in a zone is just reps and understanding what the offense is trying to do to you. And he seemed to understand that really well. I'm not saying he was 100%, but for a rookie, man, he looked good. And he'll take a big jump next year and have a lot more confidence. So, but yeah, I mean, I think all of that aside with KJ and everything, Brooks needs to be the guy who's like 100% on the field.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to be. He's the next up-and-coming guy, linebacker.
I guess back to the original question, if he's being asked to play less, how is KJ going to receive that news? If he's, I'm just headspace-wise, I'm wondering if he looks at it and says, okay, this is going to give me another year of earning potential. Maybe it's not at the number that I ultimately want, but you're still in the millions of dollars, more than you're going to be earning on the street doing anything else, so, and playing the game you love. So maybe that's worth it to get that extra year potentially on your career, or maybe he just feels like, hey, you guys aren't appreciating the season I just had. I am an impact player still at this point. I'm going to prove it and go do it for this team, this other team.
I think that, first of all, I don't think that sadly for KJ, that the market for a 32-year-old linebacker is going to be that great. And then I would be really surprised if the Seahawks wanted to pay him, you know, $4 million and he could get $5 million somewhere else, that he would leave. It just, you know, and I don't know if it's going to be that close. And then especially, you know, like I said, you know, you could say, hey, look, yes, we're not going to play you as much, but you know this defense. You're going to stay with Ken Norton and Bobby and Pete and all that. You're going to be, you know, we'll spare you a little bit on some of the snaps, and you can extend your career for another year. And now, you know, instead of going somewhere else, getting the heck beat out of you for $6 million, you can play here for $5 or $4 and then get two seasons in, you know, and make more money, whereas you might just get beat up. So that will be I would see it playing out that way. But, yeah, we're going to have to wait and find out. I just think the big emphasis, though, is that you got to get Jordan Brooks out on the field.
Yeah, people weighing in on this, 253. I think Brooks should take the snaps from Bobby. I'd love to see Brooks on the field at all times. Followed by one that says you're paying him 18. You don't take a linebacker off the field if you're paying him $18 million a year. So,
well, listen, at this 32.
Point, you want to get the most out of your investment. And if he's If you feel like you can be fresher, more effective at the end of the year, then you do. I mean, listen, you manage guys the way you need to manage them, whether it's in practice or game time, what have you. They've done it with Brown. They've done it with Marshawn through the years.
Right.
And if they do it with Bobby through games, you know, hey, maybe just a few, you're doing 85% of the snaps instead of 95. You know, maybe that adds up at the end of the year. But ultimately, within that one game, not a huge difference.
Yeah.
So
yeah, totally agree.
All right, coming up, we told you about it. New Lions head coach Dan Campbell. He's got a soundbite that I think will live on forever. You're going to hear it when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
This team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth. All right, and when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing, all right? That's going to be the mentality.
Oddly specific. We're going to not get knocked down, get back up, take a kneecap off. Then it's going to take two more shots. We'll go down again. Then we're going to get back up and bite the other kneecap off. Then it's going to take three shots to knock us down again. And then we're going to take a hunk out of you. Very, very specific.
You had that whole thing pictured. It's too sort of remote as a reference, but my name for him is Hanover Fist.
Yo, you were going.
If anybody ever saw Heavy Metal,
yeah,
which was a animated cartoon, I mean, this guy is—he's a meathead. I mean, just how he sounds and everything, and he's kind of got that
very meathead voice.
Yeah, so
take a kneecap off.
Well, look, I'll say this. I mean, I just think the reason I thought this was so funny is everybody's talking about creativity and artistic and, you know, original and innovative and all these things. And this guy's talking about hitting somebody over the head with a sledgehammer. And football is about that. A lot of it is about that. I mean, it's much more than people think. And so if you have a tough, hard-nosed team that's going to, you know, reflect that the head coach, then, yeah, I mean, that's going to win. Being physical helps you win. And that's a big part of it. So I'm interested to see what happens. It's just weird that Detroit was going to go with Robert Saleh. You know, they were excited about him. I never heard this guy's name in the mix.
I didn't either.
But I guess he must have interviewed really well. Played 10 years in the league. He was a tight end. He had like 934 yards in, what, 9 years? So he wasn't like a pass catcher or anything like that.
He interviewed well, if that sort of thing pumps you up, I guess.
Yeah. Sorry, 10 years. Yeah, he did. I mean, 10 years, 934 yards as a tight end. So a little under 100 yards per season from him. He scored 11 touchdowns as a tight end. But now so he's been coaching for a while, and I guess
we're going to get knocked down. Going to get up, bite off a kneecap, take two more blows, go down, bite off the other kneecap.
I just want to know if you think that would pump your locker room up when you were playing. Like, how do you think guys would respond to that?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I would like it. Look, I always said I wasn't a great linebacker, but I was always physical. And
did you bite a kneecap ever? Did that ever happen?
No, because I had a face mask.
Yeah, that gets in the way of biting, huh?
Yeah, you can't bite. It never occurred to me.
That's the only thing that stopped you?
Yeah. No, it never occurred for me to bite anybody. Just punch. Choke.
Doesn't that sound like a bite that's going to just live on regardless? We're going to hear that for years down the road in, you know, different situations. It's like, just for whatever reason, what's his name? Gundy. I'm a man. I'm 40. You know, those things, they just pop up.
Yep. It kind of, and he kind of had a Van Down by the River type of
Matt Foley
voice there. Good stuff.
I'm going to put the dagger in him. Watch. Hey, John, one back.
Dropping Breeze. Breeze dropping is the pass. Oh, it's intercepted. Picked off by Devin White. We're in business deep in Saints territory.
Come on, man. Come on.
got hands, too.
I told you I was going to put the dagger in him, man. Tom Brady! Good job, man. Good job, man. Good job, man.
You do intercept no
Come on, man.
What? Where'd that high-pitched squeal come from? That's Devin White, who basically called his shot, saying he was going to put the dagger in him, and then he comes up with his fourth-quarter interception of Drew Brees, and then they were celebrating about, you know, he's got hands. Sound like Tom Brady say, you got hands.
Yeah. He, you know what?
It was then he said, what do you think you're doing intercepting all those passes?
Yeah. was that White that was doing the high-pitched?
That was. He was saying, come on.
He's
I love it. I love that Tom Brady's coming over, talking to him. I mean, that was a pretty good interception. I think it was Kamara was running like a seam route, and Breeze thought he was going to turn around or something, and he had to reach for it pretty far to get that. But, I mean, it's impressive when you have – it's hard to catch as a linebacker, for me anyway it was, because, you know, you're hitting people, and you're expecting collisions and everything, and now all of a sudden you got to have
– the ball's on
finesse. Yeah. And you got to catch the ball, and – you know, sometimes you can't see it, or you see it at the last second. So
now, I'm
really
not clear.
Impressive.
Are you a fan of Devin White?
Yeah, I really love Devin White, Bob. This guy is so much fun to watch. He has my freshman year at Wooster High School. I was number 45.
Oh, okay.
And he wears number 45, which is kind of an odd number.
It is. I was just about
number.
To say that. That's
yeah.
And it's like seeing Dunlap in his number.
Right.
Which is what, 40? Is he 43? 43. Yeah, it looks weird.
Yeah. People remembered me because of my 92, but the year that that I played with Rufus Porter and Terry Wooden, Terry was 90, I was 92, Ruf was 97. So, yeah, we had all 90 numbers back then. But, yeah, the 45, it's a little unusual, but he's also a shorter guy, and he just is so physical, and he can make plays as well. So it'll be interesting this weekend. I mean, as good as that offense looks for the Packers, Tampa Bay, they killed him. Green Bay was never in that game when they played in Week 6. 38 to 10.
Pulling for the Bucs here?
Kind of am.
You're pulling for the
defense. Was Devontae Adams healthy then? I think he might have been out.
I'm not sure.
It's a big difference.
Yeah.
I know they
28
played horribly.
Points, though?
No, probably not that. But. Yeah.
Are you pulling for Brady, Maura? You still have a little fandom left in you or not?
There's still a little there. He lost me a bit with the Antonio Brown campaign.
Yeah. But Antonio Brown's been okay. I mean,
hasn't
okay.
been that long.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long. But also, I wonder if like the lack of internet, the fact that everything's shut down and everything, maybe that's kind of.
Well, I think he's living with Tom Brady.
Yeah, maybe that's controlling him a little bit.
Jeez.
Yeah, he needs a chaperone at all times.
He needs a handler.
Yeah, like Moyer.
Yeah.
That's right. That's terrible. Oh. That's terrible,
Paul.
People were talking about you, Mina. People are very highly, they think highly of you. I thought that maybe you'd probably be too busy with your new gig, that you wouldn't want to leave that. So maybe that leaves Seattle with the possibility of landing Lenny.
Lenny would be a bold choice. Not going to lie. Even Lenny, like I said, though, he's not biting kneecaps. So I don't know if he has the proper aggression that NFL coaches want. And he also, he does run the ball and lacks the ability to throw it. So Pete Carroll might be interested. But for me personally, I would say my number one priority, and I think I can sum this in three words, not Adam Gase. Those
Fair.
Are three words that I would pinpoint.
Amen, sister. I'm with her on that one. Who's Lenny?
It's her dog.
It's her dog.
She has a podcast that was like the Mina Kimes podcast with Lenny.
I saw Divish's dog today.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Like a black lab. And it was like licking the table because I was on the conference call for the Mariner thing. I found myself on there and I forgot to mute the video part of it.
Uh-oh.
My hair was sticking up and had on goofy clothes and whatnot.
Well, it sounds like everybody else had their video on too.
Yeah. But all of those guys did. So we saw Divish's dog there.
Okay. So Lenny is her dog. And
Lenny's the dog.
But more importantly, what she's looking for is not Adam Gase, which I can totally be on board with her.
Yeah, and just to recap, Maura had a great idea yesterday, read five quotes from five different potential offensive coordinators. Bob picked two, and I picked two. The one we didn't pick was Adam Gase.
We both did not pick that one
and
quote.
And I purposely tried to pick a quote that to where you guys wouldn't know that it was him.
Had no idea.
But you still didn't pick him.
Yeah. So
I wasn't even thinking about him when we were doing that.
Yeah. Well, Just imagine if you would have picked him, Bob. You would never, wouldn't have been able to sleep.
I would have walked over to you and demanded you smack me in the mouth immediately. Immediately. All right. This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up, some news in the Pac-12 that seems to have made a lot of people happy. Larry Scott is going to be departing. The Huskies have lost their defensive coordinator. We're going to touch on all of that with Mike Varela of the Seattle Times. He joins us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.